Welcome to Between Two Chairs, Demystifying Commercial Real Estate, the podcast that brings you the latest insights and trends on the South Florida commercial real estate market with your hosts, Fernando Arencibia Jr. and Jennifer Wollman. In each episode, we dive into the world of commercial real estate and break down complex concepts to make them accessible for everyone. Whether you're a real estate professional, a curious investor, or just interested in the South Florida market in general, Between Two Chairs is the podcast for you. So pull up a chair and join us.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Between Two Chairs. My name is Fernando Arencibia, and with me, as always, is the taskmaster scheduler in chief, Jennifer Wollman.
That was a good one. That was good, huh? Scheduler in chief. You guys don't understand trying to get this man to record and commit to a date. Oh my gosh. I make myself into a pretzel trying to chase him all over the place. Everyone thinks we're always together. The only time we're together is when I can wrangle him into the podcast studio or if we happen to run into each other at a commercial event.
That is fair. That is very fair. Oh, well, we have a special episode today. This is part of a series that we have conducted over the time that we've been doing the podcast called Anatomy of a Deal. And in it, we'd like to break down some of the specifics of a real world transaction that we have been involved in so that we could share some of the perhaps roadblocks that our clients have had to overcome, little curveballs that have been thrown into a deal. We like these because, you know, sometimes you get presentations that are very generic, right, about how you transact in different asset classes. But when you look at the actual anatomy of a specific deal, there are usually a lot of lessons that you learn from it, and you never know how it resonates with the people that are listening to it, right? You may be involved in the middle of a transaction, or you may be contemplating the acquisition of a prop or leasing of a property, and that it might generate some ideas for you. So we always find them infinitely interesting because we love what we do, but also we hope that they are valuable to you.
Giving you some insights that we happen to come across while we're in the middle of a deal. We've done one on, remind me, we did one on an industrial warehouse. Yep. That was a sale that you did. And we did one that had, that was land or a warehouse that had that weird environmental thing with the roadway. Okay. So those were both sales transactions that we did. So today we decided we were going to focus on leasing, on a lease deal, and kind of dissect that lease. And it's a lease for a restaurant.
Yeah, okay. It's a lease for a restaurant. And this actually happened in the middle to the end of 2023, but it is still a live transaction. And this is what happens with commercial leases, that because of a variety of issues that are involved with build out and with getting the property ready, some things take a little longer than others. And so it is a process.
Correct. And what we like to do in this anatomy of a deal is we do follow kind of a blueprint. You know, why do investors like this asset class? So in this case, imagine your landlord being a landlord who's leasing out the restaurant, or your tenant wanting to invest in restaurant space, right? What do investors look for in evaluating this? So if you were evaluating the lease, let's say that's inside of a strip mall or wherever it is, how do you evaluate that based on the lease itself? What are the positives of owning this asset class? And what are the issues to look out for when you're preparing a lease, either from a landlord side or from a tenant user side?
Correct. So I'll tell you a little bit of the breakdown of the property. Let's start with that. Mm-hmm. So this is a 3,000 square foot end cap. End cap is a fancy way to say it's in the corner of the shopping center, right? And it was a second generation restaurant, which basically means that it already had a grease trap. It already had a hood. It was already permitted for restaurant use. And it was in a major thoroughfare in a very hot and in-demand market for restaurants. So there was a lot of competition for the space. My client is a regional food and beverage brand that is very well known in South Florida. And they have a great reputation for quality. And they have a great reputation for the ambiance that they create in their space and the experience. And there are a few interesting items that are here. Now, why is second generation restaurants very much in demand for food and beverage players? Well, first of all, the expectation is that you already have the grease trap, you already have the hood, so your build out should be a lot shorter and things should move in relatively faster than if you were taking into a space that you have to build a grease trap, build a hood, but also do a change of use, right? The certificate of use from that municipality is not going to be the same as the one prior. So in a second generation restaurant, there is a lot of roadblocks, if you will, to opening up the business that theoretically don't exist there. And I say theoretically because hence the whole point of the podcast is to share with you a little bit of the intricacies that you learn by going through the deal. My client submitted an offer for this space to lease it out over a long-term period. The landlords are from New York and they have very little familiarity with this brand. Even though this brand has 8 different units, you know, basically 8 different stores here in South Florida. It's a very, very, very well-known brand. And so the first aspect of this that I think we want to discuss is that you cannot, as a broker or as an end user, assume that the landlord is going to know who you are, right? And the landlord wants to know very much who you are when they are entering into a lease for their space, especially if you're doing a 10-year lease, which is what this was. We've spoken about this before, about the importance of landlords curating the space, right? You may think in a vacuum, you would say, well, what does the landlord care if the landlord is going to get its price per square foot and if it's going to have their rent paid? Curating the space requires you to think long-term and to think about the overall health of the entire shopping center. You have to think, if I put a use in here that might prevent the other spaces from being leased, then it doesn't matter what I get paid here. I'm going to really negatively damage the health and vitality of the shopping center, right? And so it would be very difficult to make it perform. Alternatively, if you put the right use in there, then you enhance the ability because they are basically attractors to other tenants of quality that you want to attract to your center.
Right. You're increasing the foot traffic for everybody based on who you're putting in the center.
Exactly. So the first thing that we had to do, and luckily, my counterpart, right, the leasing agent, knew my client. Right. They knew the product. They had gone to the stores. They had eaten there. They loved it. Right. But they also had to convince the owners about the quality of the tenant that they were getting. And part of it is, as I told you, it was very competitive. So they already had other food and beverage concepts reach out to them. And some of them were national brands. Right. And they were contemplating, well, what decision do we make? Luckily, from my purview and from the purview of the listing agent, we both saw that it was really to the benefit of the landlord to have this use here because the other national use was not of the quality that he wanted to attract, right? So the first thing we had to do is basically create a pitch deck for the restaurant because they wanted to get really a glance of what it is. Luckily, this restaurateur group had been interviewed in national and local. So we had plenty of articles about them. We had information about every single unit that they had already had in place. Their financials were strong. So the first thing was just a pitch deck. Hey, is this the use that you want? Before we get to financials.
Right. And let me stop you there because this is a link in case you guys didn't hear. We did an interview with Sarah Hernandez and she talked about the importance of when you are going in to get financing on a purchase of, let's say, a shopping center or a retail building, the importance of telling the story about your building and about the tenants within the building. And she spoke about how important the leases and the quality of the tenants that you have in your retail space is to you being able to get financing or a buyer being able to get financing on the property. So I just wanted to pull that in and again, connect the dots with other conversations we've had and show how not only was your pitch deck and your positioning helping the landlord decide on which tenant to bring in the long run, that same pitch deck can be used by the landlord to either refinance the shopping center or to help increase the value at the time of sale. So thank you for letting me digress.
And it's part of the consideration that the landlords have, and it's always in their mind. Even if the landlord is not considering, I'm going to finance this or refinance the space or any of that, remember, you're entering into a long-term relationship of 10 years, right? And so you have to take into account that, yeah, maybe in 5 years, I'm going to refinance this space. Maybe there is other moves that I want to make. So I want to have that, and I want that to be strong and consistent. So once we send out the pitch deck, we were getting closer to them agreeing that these are the people that they wanted to partner with, that these are the tenants that they wanted in the space. And what really tipped the balance, because they were still not 100% convinced, was that I found out where the ownership group had their main offices in New York City. And my client had entered into a tenancy in a space that was a mixed-use development right in the heart of US 1 that was owned by a REIT that was in New York and was literally two blocks away from these landlords' main offices. And so I was able to basically say, look, if you want any more guarantee here, you could speak to this, to the head of this fund that has them as tenants who seek, you know, they went out of their way to seek our clients.
Right, they lured your clients.
They lured our clients to say, we want you here because we know we're going to attract better people. And I said, listen, all he has to do is walk two blocks down in Manhattan and knock in their door, and he'll be able to get the information straight out of the lion's mouth. And then that, I think, helped tip the balance aside again. And I do have to give a lot of credit to the listing agent who also saw the value from a curation perspective. And the listing agent was also managing the property. So he understood, this is going to make my job a lot easier to attract the kind of people that we want to the center. And it's going to make it, you know, a whole lot better. So we get into the 3,000 square foot space. We enter into an agreement. And this is where negotiations go and become very important. Obviously, even though it's a second generation restaurant, the food and beverage concept requires a build out, right? It's never going to be the same. You're going to have to do some investment. And there was also a question mark about whether the current grease trap had to be renovated or not, right? In 2017, Miami-Dade County changed the rules. And so depending on the output of the restaurant, there are some grease traps that are grandfathered in and that you can use for a new restaurant. But if the output is higher, then it will trigger the new regulation. So now you have to build a much more expensive grease trap than was originally built there. My client did do some due diligence in regards to the quality of the grease trap, making sure that it was in solid condition, making sure that it was usable and all those things prior to signing the lease. So we got all that stuff out of the way. The negotiations begin, as they do in every lease, about tenant improvements. And this is where it's great when you have a tenant that has flexibility. So the landlord does not like to give credit for tenant improvements, but they were willing to give plenty of time in lieu of that money in regards to free rent. And that's exactly what happened.
And we did do an episode, again, just to tie it back, that we did do an episode all about tenant improvements versus rent abatement, etc. So we don't have to go into it in a lot of detail here, but there is an episode on that. And to your point, the only time landlords are willing to give any TI is usually when they have a lot of vacancies. So when you're brokering restaurants or leases or anything like that, if you know, you have to look at the vacancy rate in the area to know more or less what you can go after.
I completely agree. And in this case, what was really interesting is, as I told you, my client had now leased this corner unit, and I think the agreement was made in August. And then there was a space next door that as he was developing the plans to submit to the city for approval to do the build out, the space next door was empty. And the listing agent had told us that, this person has a signed lease for 2 years.
They have 2 years left on the lease, but he's really not using it as much. And, you know, we don't know whether he is willing to maybe leave a little early. And then, you know, a couple of months into this, my client asked me, can we inquire about the place next door? To make a long story short, the place next door was available, but it required negotiations between the landlord and its current tenant. The landlord wanted to have some guarantee that, hey, if I negotiate with this tenant, that you're actually going to take the space.
How much more space was it?
It was another 1,000 square feet.
Okay, so for a total of four.
For a total of four.
From three to four, yeah. Okay.
So in the middle of this, you know, what ended up happening basically is my client, you know, we came to an agreement on the acquisition of the place next door. There was a 2-month period that he had to wait to actually get access to the property while they closed out the other stuff. And then an amendment to the lease was created. So this was a lease that was signed in August. And then there was an amendment to that lease in December. And they wanted the timelines to run concurrently on both spaces, because in the future, for the sake of accounting, right, and to make it easier on the accounting department, you know, you don't want to have two spaces. So usually landlords will work it out so that there is a way to say, okay, you're going to get the same amount of credit for this 1,000 square foot space as you're getting for the 3,000, but we're going to have to either increase that amount so that it still ends at the same time, and then you're going to get only one, you're going to have one unified lease, one unified billing, one unified invoice, one unified CAM, and that way we don't have to worry about that.
Now, was the rate the same?
The rate was the same.
But the space next door wasn't second-gen restaurant.
It wasn't second-generation restaurant.
But they played the same. They didn't do a blended rate.
They didn't do a blended rate.
Okay, and the reason I asked that is because I just did a lease with the same thing. I mean, the ink was barely dry on the lease when the tenant, and this was a medical tenant, said, I need to add 450 square feet because of this, this, and this.
Right.
But we had already done the rent abatement and the TI and started the lease about a month out. So now we're trying to bring this in, and it wasn't as desirable space. So we did a tiny bit, but in the overall picture of the lease, it was so small that it didn't make a big difference. But then to your point, we just amended the lease. So it happens more frequently than you think, that once they get in there, they realize, I might have underestimated the space that I need.
And
okay.
For them, it was just a convenience. They knew we're going to be here for 10 years, that extra, and it may have been under 1,000, it might have been 800 square feet. That, and in lieu of doing a blended rate or battling on the rate, the battle happened more on the terms.
Okay.
Right? Yeah. And it happened more on the credits for the TI and all that stuff. So there was a give and take there, you know, at the end of the day. Now, here is where we are having an issue, I believe. Obviously, every challenge is an opportunity, but what Miami-Dade County and what all the 47 municipalities within Miami-Dade County have an opportunity to do is to really improve upon the services that they provide when it comes to zoning and approvals and permitting. Because this is not a property that should take this long to complete the build-out.
So tell me when you signed the
in
lease.
December. So the amended lease was signed in December of 2023, right? The original lease was signed in August of 2023. And my client is about to open, God willing, in the middle of the first quarter of 2025. So it has taken a year and a half to get it done, where we felt that we could probably get it done in 8 months. And in the past, I believe that would have been the case.
So tell me a little bit about that, because those are the issues that we're running into, right? So tell me, I know where the opportunity is, because I know you and the advocacy side. Tell me a little bit about that, because how do you go, and luckily this is an experienced tenant, right? So they're used to this, but how do you make numbers work? And we've had this conversation with the F&B guy and all this about how long it's taking, where restaurants are saying, okay, it's going to take me 8 months to open. You either have TI or you have a free rent period. By now, probably both of those have been blown through because of the time it's taking to get everything done. So if everything you're doing as both a tenant and a landlord is based on your numbers and your time frame goes from, and you guys were probably being conservative in what you thought was 8 months. You probably thought realistically six, but let's give it a couple of months extra for whatever. Now you're at a year and a half. How do you overcome that? So the numbers work or the deal still works, the landlord's, you know, getting paid or the tenant's getting abatements. Yeah. Walk us through a little bit of
Let's talk a little bit about that, because where are we finding the bottlenecks? Number one, it is my feeling that most of these municipalities, and I think it's also very clear that DERM
is our Department of Environmental Regulations,
right? And so we did an episode where we spoke about a metric that was very key to Casey Conway, the economist, about Florida, that there were, in 2024, 580,000 new business applications, right? And that we are number one in the nation for that. Well, when you have so many new businesses, corporations moving to one place, it's clear to me that the infrastructure from the zoning and planning departments and the permitting departments are not ready to really see a huge increase in applications, right? So I think part of it is that they need more employees. The second thing is that, of course, those employees require training. So they need to do a significant amount of training in a very short period of time. And you would be surprised as to what constitutes a delay in getting approval. And I'll explain this to you. You go to the department, you get a comment from one department within the planning and zoning and permitting department. So now let's say that it is a plumbing note. The plumbing note has been addressed, and now you want to overcome, and they say, well, you need to have that physical new plans or the amended plans in the physical plans at the city. So your architect goes to the city, he puts it in there. Now they're waiting for the comment to be removed so that you can move on to the next stage. But the comment is not removed. The comment continues to stay there. And they keep saying, well, the document is not there. And then eventually you make an appointment, the head of the department, to go and see it. And they open it. And lo and behold, it's there. Right? The document is there. And so that entire thing took 3 weeks. That's just one minor example of people not having the sense of urgency. And I think that's the other part, is that unfortunately, the mindset in the departments don't have the same sense of urgency as the operators.
And let me stop you there, because this is, you know, me and connecting the dots in my brain, like right now is on hyperdrive, because we've been having this conversation because Miami Commercial is going to tackle this year. But Hugh Chen, who is with Saglo, did an amazing video on LinkedIn, and we'll provide the link in the show notes. But he broke down the cascading effects of leasing a vacant space and the multiplier effect that has. And I think what you're bringing up is huge. And I wanted to tie it in just to his very beginning statement. And that is, for every month that a 10,000 square foot retailer is delayed in opening for business, it may cause $45,000 of lost opportunity for tax revenue for each month on a local, state, and federal level.
Wow.
The reason I point that out is for any of you who are having an issue or have had an issue with permits in your local municipality, I am telling you, Google and look up Hugh's video and send an email and make a meeting with your local zoning mayor, city commissioner, whoever will listen to you, to show them the effect of what these delays mean. For every month, 45,000, and granted, yours wasn't a 10,000 square foot, but let's say it was 10,000 square feet.
Yeah.
45,000 a month, and you're at a year and a half versus 8 months. Let's say you had conservatively said 6 months. You're a year over. That's 12 months times $45,000. Oh my gosh, that's a lot of money. That is going to get your local people's attention in terms of saying, we need to fix something. And your point, if it's hiring more people or having more oversight or getting them to work from home, I mean, getting them to work at the office instead of at home where the paper stays on their desk in their guest room versus in their office, or whether they digitize all that so everybody has access to everything. That shouldn't have been a piece of paper in a folder, for God's sake. So anyway, sorry, that was my rant, but I wanted to tie it in. So
look, it's a significant problem, and it's something that we need to address. And as I was mentioning, I think part of what is very frustrating for business owners is that they feel that the individuals that they're interacting with in these departments show a lack of care for the enormous risk that the business owner is taking when they're taking on this venture. You and I both know, and I think it's widely known, restaurants are a notoriously very, very difficult business. Half of them go out of business.
Their margins are tiny.
Their margins are tiny, and they have been dealing with so much since the start of the pandemic and all the way through today. And so I think what is very frustrating is, and this is where the opportunity is, because what has happened is we know that Florida as a whole is a very business, pro-business state, right? Based on the decisions they have made specifically regarding taxation and regulation, right? But when you go to these departments, there are people that are coming, big groups that have restaurants in Texas, in California, in New York.
In Vegas.
Yeah. And they've told us, we thought it was crazy in New York and in California, but when sometimes their comments to us is that this is a nightmare here, that is a huge issue of concern. Now, I think it's a temporary issue, right?
Yeah.
But the other item that I want to bring up is that these departments, when we were hit with the pandemic, shifted the way they did business. And now they were more online and the interaction was only by email and all those things. Well, the problem with that is that we are on the other side of the pandemic. Mm-hmm. And they haven't, in many municipalities, have not gone back to the way they used to do business before. I'm all for, let's take all of the good tech and all of the streamlined processes that you were forced to adopt during the pandemic. Let's keep using that. But let's not ignore that there is great value as an end user to be able to go to the city, to be able to go to that department and to clarify things that get lost in translation through email, because the right hand doesn't know what the left hand is doing. And so it's about, you have to hire more, you have to have better training, you have to have a different mindset, right? And I think the mindset is the biggest hurdle here.
Well, and it's also, excuse me, the process, right? You and I always talk about the process. If you don't have an automated process where something was checked off, like we received this paper that you found.
Right.
Exactly. Had been sent, but nobody knew it had been in there, was there's no process. The process can't be you get the paper and you stick it in a manila folder.
Correct. And listen, human error is a big part of this.
So let's get on to some of the other issues, because that is definitely, to your point, an advocacy opportunity. So you ran into the delay issue. Were there any physical things that you ran into, like for your point of view, the grease trap or the hood? Or
to me, a lot of that was processes more than anything, because to the original point, it was a second generation restaurant. We knew that the grease trap was good and it was usable for, you know, what we did. These are issues of growth, right? These are growing pains in a city that has experienced a good amount of growth, and it looks like it's going to continue to experience that. And some of it is the taxing of our resources, right? So you got to make sure that, and we understand that, for example, the Department of Environmental Regulation, DERM, does have a mandate that is important. You know, and look, nobody here is advocating against, you know, having clean water.
No, at all.
And fresh air. However, if you have a 3-week delay because a paper, they say that it isn't where it is and it is there, you know, it's those are the little things that really nick people as they're going through it. So from my understanding, a big part of it was that. Now, there's also something that naturally happens when you originally develop plans for 3,000 square feet and now you acquire another 1,000 square feet. Now you're going to amend that build out. So some of the delays are as a result of that.
Correct.
Right.
Correct.
And so 100%. To be fair, some of the delays are a result of that. But remember, the space that they're acquiring is dry. It was going to be for a market. It wasn't a space that would have required a significant amount of delays. That is the anatomy on a nutshell. You know, I'm confident that when my client opens up in the middle of the first quarter, that he is going to have a great launch, that it's going to be successful. It's a market that they know well. It's a market that knows them. I think the location is superb, and I think they're going to do great. And in the long term, they're going to do great. But you can't make up 6 months of lost potential revenue. You just can't do that. Yeah. During that time, there's a lot of gray matter that is, you know, expended trying to deal with things. And I think it's really interesting that we have not had opportunities for more communication. And this is where I think it's interesting that we heard from the Beacon Council. I think this is where maybe the Beacon Council has an opportunity to affect change, to have more of communication between the private and the public sector, for them to understand each other's perspective on where they're coming from. Because the last thing we want is for people to feel that it is so difficult that they don't even want to make the investment.
Correct. And it's funny because Florida is known as such a business-friendly state in so many other aspects, from taxation to how easy to get cooperation and helping you find a space. I mean, everybody from FPL to economic development councils to everything else try to make it easier. And then you finally find your space and you run into this brick wall. So that gets us into one of the final questions that we always ask when we do an anatomy of a deal, and that's the importance of working with others. So tell me a little bit, given these delays, how was it? You already said at the beginning how good it was working with the leasing rep who was from here, who knew your tenant. But how was it working with him, with the landlord, with if you had permit expediters? How did that relationship work in the face of these difficulties? Because this is where stuff can blow up and a long-term relationship can start off poorly. So tell me a little bit about that.
No, I mean, my involvement in that sense was limited because, you know, at some point, you know, my client and his entire infrastructure took over the relationship and all that other stuff. I remember early on getting involved more along the lines of my client was inquiring, what improvements are you going to make to the property? When are you going to, you know, re-asphalt the driveway? What are your future plans as we were going through this? And I remember them reaching out and let us know, how's it going with the permitting? You know, do you have any copies of the plans that have been submitted? And can we help you expedite that in one way or another? And they did make connections and they tried to, you know, they tried to help out and follow through. But at some point, you know, it was in the hands of the municipality, right? It was, everybody had done what they were supposed to do. And at that point is in the hands of the municipality. It's also to the credit of my client, understanding that they have eight other locations. They understand what it's like to deal with, you know, with that. But it's also to the point of being able to have a long-term view and understand that these are kind of like growing pains as you're expanding. At some point, there is only so much that you can protect yourself to do that. Remember, he's here for the long term.
Right.
I think that having that long-term perspective allows you to go through these through growing pains. But I also believe that, and this is something I heard my client say, like, I don't want to do build out anymore. He understands we're very good at what we do and we have the processes down packed and we have our cost controlled and we are very good at staffing and we're very good at
and
providing.
And we know our contractor, our contractor knows what we want.
But he felt that, and I think that this is something we're going to hear a lot, and this is something that landlords need to be prepared for, is that you might have a really good tenant that you want in place and the tenant is going to want you to do all the build out yourself. Because they don't want to go through the gray.
The headache.
They don't want to go through the headache because to the client, they're also thinking like, man, I'm losing time where I should be investing in my business and I'm doing it to grow my business, but I'm doing things that I am not as proficient at, right? Or that it doesn't matter who's proficient at, it's still going to take all that time, but it's taking time from me. When you have a CFO of an operation that has to now spend time doing a lot of that work, then they start to reconsider, well, how do we want to do this moving forward? You know,
right, to grow.
And so I think a lot of the new concepts and new developments that are happening, when they're going to find their anchor, they're going to have to come to that agreement, that realization. If we want this tenant here and we know that they're good for the long haul and they're willing to sign a 10-year lease and we know construction because we built the project, let me bring them in early and I will build it to their specs. But bringing them in early, even before you break ground, mm-hmm. you know, might be the way to go, because now I'm building it from the beginning and I don't have to reconfigure anything.
Right.
You know,
right.
So I think the economies of scale are going to take place where a lot of people are going to want to sign those leases way in advance in exchange for having the landlord take care of all those things. You
know? And I think that's a super important point, given how many, what we've been hearing, how many franchises and tenants are expanding significantly in 2025, and how many of them are moving to Florida. So I think that's a good point. And we know we have construction. We have a lot of mixed use buildings going in that are looking for those types of tenants and draws. So
great. Oh, absolutely.
Thank you.
All right. By the way, I want to make this mention, because we're talking about leasing, but like, I was thinking the cost of, you know, a lot of landlords for medical space they're willing to, on a 10-year lease, depending on the size of the space, they're willing to do maybe $50 a square foot of TI. But I was hearing that in some of these medical spaces, they're paying, their total cost comes out to $100, $120 of TI a square foot. So that means that there are a lot of these medical tenants that are spending a huge chunk of money to build out the space, even though they get a little bit of a reprieve. It used to be that $50 of TI was great. You could cover almost all of it. But now you're not even covering 50% in some cases, which is, it's incredible.
Significant. Yeah. And that's why once you do get those tenants in there, they're really sticky, right? Oh, yeah, because they've spent so much money.
Of course. And they build it to their specifications, you know? All right. Well, do you have a fun fact?
No, I was waiting.
How about a non-fun fact? How about a really boring fact? All right. Well, thank you, everybody, for joining us. I don't know what it is about the way that you're sitting, but it looks, I look
chair,
huge.
And you look, my chair, I don't know. Someone shrink that there. There someone you go. Shrinks my chair, I feel like. And I found out too late, and I didn't want to like up it in the middle of.
I just, in the video, I look like a huge head, and then you're there in the distance, all tiny and stuff.
Yeah, anyhow. I did. Well, wait, I do have a fun fact from the Beacon Council. And again, this was interesting because, you know, we're such an international market here in Miami. And I love some of the numbers that Rod threw out. They're working, the Beacon Council is working on 102 projects for 2025. And 53% of the projects, which for them are companies moving here or opening an office here, whether it's headquarters or just a satellite office, out of those 102 projects, 53% of them are international. Wow. And their two top drivers for coming here are talent and real estate. So that's huge, 53%. And the number one country with the most number of businesses in Miami-Dade County is who? Who would you guess?
Say that again, the number one?
The country with the most companies here in Florida. I mean, here in Miami-Dade. What country?
So, okay, but is it a Latin American country? You're not going to give me a hint?
It's a foreign country.
It's a foreign country. Well, I know that Colombia?
You would say Colombia because they're the number one searching the Miami Realtors. No, Spain.
Spain.
Spain, which I'm not surprised because I get calls all the time from Spain wanting to...
Road trip.
Yep, for sure. easy for me. I love Spain. All righty. Thank you, everybody, so much for joining us on another episode of Between Two Chairs. And Fernando, thank you, as always, for sharing your insights with these anatomies of a deal. If you like these deals, or if you have a deal you would like to share, if you found out something really cool on one of your deals or really scary that we should be looking out for, please reach out to either Fernando and myself, and we would love to interview you. On an episode of Between Two Chairs.
I love it. Bye, everybody.
Bye.